Season 5, Episode 22, Honeymoon at Viagra Falls. We open up with a DOA woman and child in an apartment that is, what's weird is the body is just out in the open. I found that kind of strange.
Because
it seems to be there for a while just out in the open. Simone is running down what the super knows, and Sipowicz shows up, walks past the uniform officer, who just says, "It's bad." Sipowicz walks in to see the scene. Dead mother and child. Looks like the mother was trying to protect the child. The landlord says the former husband took an interest in the child. He would bring by money when he had it to support the child. He's a decent man. And Mrs. Suarez, kept to herself, worked in the jewelry district. He even then mentions it looks like she was trying to protect him, don't it? Mentions that there were some half-assed break-in attempts that didn't lead to anything. And then after all of this conversation, then the uniforms show up with the covering to cover up the dead people. That's really the only thing I noticed from the beginning.
Better late than ever, though, right?
It was like... And I think this is like one of the first times they have a conversation with the super or with the first on the scene while the bodies are just out there in the open. Usually they take them away to another room or something.
Yeah, that's true.
This time they're just like, no, let's chill next to the dead bodies. Why not?
Oh, does death make you uncomfortable? Too bad.
That's unfortunate for you. Anyway, with that, this is NYPD Blue Balls. I'm Kirk, the other voice is Kyle, and we go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Alright, so we got two basic stories happening here, and I'll go over the not as important one, because it's very quick. When we come back from the break, Kirkendall and Russell are in the coffee room getting coffee. Russell mentions that it'll make her jumpier than usual. Does that thing with Kirkendall that people do where they're like, I don't want to tell you, but I'll tell you. Like, I can't tell you, but I'll tell you. If you want me to tell you, I'll tell you. But I can't tell you, but I'll tell you. And they kind of go back and forth with that until she just mentions that she's going to get married to Simone. And Kirkendall says, I was hoping it would be that. And I kind of underlined it. Don't you think that Kirkendall is a little gel? She's a little jelly?
Oh, yeah. She tried to hit that Simone meat a long time ago. And Simone was about to, but then he was conflicted, you know?
He was about to hit that Kirkendall, but instead he went back to the Russ. We find out that Russell hasn't told anybody, hasn't told her own family, like hasn't told anybody else but Kirkendall. Kirkendall asks, well, how are you going to do it? And Russell responds, as much as we always have, or I'm going to be really pissed off. And she's like, oh, you mean get married? And it's like, yeah, that's probably what a normal person would ask in that situation. It wouldn't be, oh, you're getting married? How often are you going to be boning?
She's nervous.
She's jumpy. She's getting married. She mentions that it's going to be at lunchtime at City Hall. And then Officer Shannon comes in with a missing daughter to break up that feels party. He mentions that he was looking around with the father for about an hour and they can't find her. So Kirkendall, you know, stopped the celebration to go figure out what's going on with this missing child.
And she should.
Yeah, you know. There's a time and a place for celebrating marriage, and it isn't at your job when you look for murderers and possible pedophiles. They meet Art Mandel, or Art Mantel. I wrote it two different ways. It could be either.
I think it's Mandel.
Art Mandel says he has a daughter named Chloe, and they sing together at the park, and he has told her to not wander off, but they cannot find her. They go over the usual schedule where he sings with her in the morning, then takes her to the bus, then picks her up from the bus, and they sing a little bit more before going home. Kirkendall and Russell ask about child welfare, which he said, yes, it's from people who don't understand that he needs to make a living. He always mentions that he's at the bus stop, he never forgets. So then they ask, are there any suspicious people who hang around his daughter, possible pedos, some PPs? He gives them two suspects, a guy named Cy and a guy named Teacher. and say, quote, they like her too much. Gross.
How do they like her too much, you know?
And that's another thing, and we both don't have children that we know of. It is kind of weird, the idea of, like, having a child and then having to see them interact with other adults and wonder to yourself, like, oh my gosh, is this dude a fucking pedophile? Like, obviously it's different because he, like, sings on the street with his daughter and there's people all over the place all the time. But, like, just the idea that you're like, yeah, these two dudes, I don't like these two dudes. I don't like what these two dudes are up to.
Yeah, like, are they fucking up this guy's game, you know?
And then they convince him to go check the park again when he's visibly frustrated at the idea because they've already checked a whole bunch. Next time we see him, there's just a no audio check through the park where they pick up an old dude who's also asking about the girl, which is suspicious.
Yeah, that would also be red flags to me.
Like another random dude is also looking for the girl.
Yeah, and he seems like pretty into it too, you know?
Yeah, that's a big red flag. That's a big red pedo flag. When they get him back to the house, we find out that this is the character Sai, and he was looking for Chloe because he didn't see her singing where she usually is. And when they ask why he was so interested in her, he was basically like, I don't need to explain who I need to spend time with. I don't have to explain anything to you. Basically taking the very adversarial route with the police. Which they remind him, if a child is missing and a dude has expressed a lot of interest in that child, yeah, they do gotta ask those questions and get those answers. Clearly they're both just trying to scare him, and he is just letting him know that he tries to do nice things for her, buys her coats when it's cold and sun hats during the summer. I mean, I didn't get any pedophile vibes off him. I just got, like, lonely old man vibes.
Yeah, no, but, like, isn't that the whole point of, like, this dude having a, or this daughter having a, or this kid having a grandfather? Like, isn't that his job to buy her coats and shit?
You would think so, but we can tell that Art doesn't have a whole lot of money, and he hasn't mentioned his own parents, so maybe she doesn't have that type of older figure. I think the thing that sells it, that he probably didn't do anything, is he said, I always told her never to talk to strangers, but she responded with, well, then how would I have met you?
Your kid's not smart. Okay.
It's a tough spot. It's a tough spot to deal with. Like, who do you tell kids to trust and who do you not tell them to trust? They ask him about teacher, and he goes, oh, was it him? Is he the bastard? And then he says something like, oh, I know his routine, but we're not involved. Why do you know his routine if you don't like, talk to him or hang out with him?
That's weird.
That's a creepy thing to say. Oh, I know his routine, even though I have nothing to do with him.
What routine, dude?
So, the next scene is Kirkendall and Russell get what I call a male Karen, who says that they are going to go down to that coffee shop and apologize to everyone for taking him out, and explaining that he was detained in error, and they don't give him an inch of shit. They're just like, yeah, whatever. Just kind of stare at him.
It shouldn't, dude. He's crazy. He's a lunatic.
And he says, if you don't, I will pursue my legal remedies.
Or what, alcohol?
Kirkendall asks him, is your name Lewis or teacher? What would you prefer to be called? And he's like, I'd prefer you call me Mr. Simkiss. So then they just start screaming at him.
Mr. Simkiss.
Then, at one point, Kirkendall says, you know what, Lewis? I get the feeling smart hasn't helped you much in life.
Isn't that also the name of Jim Carrey's character in The Mask?
No, that's Ipkiss.
Ipkiss, okay.
Stanley Ipkiss.
Dan, like the Stanley?
No, like Stanley, like one name.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it could be a reference to Stanley. I don't know. I know The Mask was based on a comic book, but I doubt it. Anyways, they ask Lewis if he knows who Chloe is, and he basically says, I feel like Chloe is exploited by her father, and he doesn't have the means to take care of her, and he's the one that's been making contacts to child services, probably blowing up his spot, making it hard for Mr. Mantell to sing in Washington Square Park. They mention that Simkiss teacher, Lewis, was in the hospital for depression and received psychiatric care, And then he pulls out the card of, fine, you can talk to my therapist, and you can ask him if he thinks I'm a pedophile. Or maybe you can ask him why I'm a failure. And then he starts to, like, cry. And since I didn't remember exactly how this story played out, I thought for a second it was him. So I was like, oh, was this like a fake ploy to make you feel sorry for him? But then when it wasn't him, I was like, oh, wow, he is just a depressed, failing, sad sack. There is one scene where Sipowicz and Simone's story interacts with Russell and Kirkendall, but we'll leave that for later. It's mostly just them saying that they have to call up the pedophile hotline and just start phoning pedophiles, which I'm sure is a great, great fun time.
Is that a thing, though? Like,
just calling the pedophile registry?
Just calling the pedophile hotline, you know?
What's very strange is the next thing that pushes the story along is Russell just goes, yeah, we gotta talk to this guy. He just seemed real interested in the Chloe case, talking about how sad he was and all that. And then Kirkendall's like, okay, yeah, he works in a video store. And Kirkendall says, they shouldn't be allowed to work in a place like that. And then Russell says they shouldn't be allowed on the planet.
Pretty rough.
Hey, there's one thing she is. It's hard on pedophiles.
Except her dad.
Shit.
Did I say something factually wrong?
Except, I think it was just the coldness in how you said it. It was very Anthony Jeselnik of you.
I mean,
she's hard on pedophiles, except her dad.
Except her dad, dude.
I mean, she was pretty hard on him. She let her mom murder him. So the guy they bring in is named Todd. I wrote his name somewhere. Todd Ramsey. And when he comes in, he's like, where's the little boy's room? And it brings everybody to a quiet because he's a convicted pedophile. Ha ha!
Yeah, and they would never use terms like that, right?
And then when he goes to the bathroom, Russell lets everybody know that he works about 3 blocks from where Chloe disappeared. He's been convicted of, you know, being a pedophile.
Of, you know, baby shit.
They bring Todd into a room, and it's important that Fancy says, put him in the pokey room so I can watch.
Does Fancy get off on it?
And so Fancy is watching from the two-way mirror. The guy's like, look, I understand that you brought me back here on former problems. And then Kirkendall's like, shut your mouth, Todd. And they ask him to recount his last 48 hours, and then he gives a specific work schedule and lunch schedule. They ask if he opens, and he mentions that his boss, Mr. Epstein, and I was like, oh, that's convenient.
Oh, that's creepy.
He is giving him more responsibility around the store, and they mention you're gonna get hurt if you don't start answering our questions.
Is his boss, Mr. Epstein, and the general manager, Mr. Clinton?
After they say, you're going to start getting hurt if you don't start answering our questions yes or no, and then he's like, I feel an unfair thrust to that, and Kirkendall just hits him right in the face. They scream at him, did you see her? And then he says, well, that would make me valuable to your case. And then they hit him a second time, and then he kind of says, you are vicious, almost like he's rocking a bone cone, and I was like, okay, well, stop hitting him, because he seems to enjoy it.
Yeah, he's getting off on it.
And then they ask him, do you know where she is? Is she alive? And he says, I guess that makes me pretty valuable, huh? And then she says, and I quote, we will kill you and bury you where no one will find you, in a field in Nassau, and then you won't be into anything. He mentions, like, she was wandering, she needed respite. They ask after that, is she alive? And he said, being a sick and predatory person, I'm not sure, huh? And then Fancy comes in and starts taking off his jewelry and belt, and he's like, I'll take care of this. And it was like, oh, shit, Fancy's gonna do a beating. This is gonna be rad. Instead, the dude yells, wait a second, wait a second, wait a second, until he gets, like, pushed into a corner, and then he's like, I'll tell, and starts crying.
this dude's about to get a beating. This is gonna be rad.
Well, because it's Fancy. We haven't seen Fancy really get to it. We saw him, like, scream in the face of a racist, which was pretty rad. But this was also because it was just him, like, nope, we're gonna beat this dude. And, like, since he's the boss, you know, like, oh, wow. He might just start taking lines to do it, and the privilege to beat on a pedophile. The last of that entire case is Kirkendall and Russell raid his apartment and find Chloe in, like, a weird, gross children's room that has rope and a bunch of weird children's shit behind his bookcase. But that made me think, like, could you even swing that in an apartment in New York? Like, have a secret compartment behind a bookcase?
Like, depends on where you live, but you could.
you could.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, little nook and crannies in some of these apartments that you could hide weird shit.
So that is the Kirkendall and Russell story, and now the big one, which, of course, if you may remember, was a woman and her child shot in their apartment. Mm-hmm. Sipwitz and Simone come back to run everything for Fancy, and Fancy just says, double with a kid, huh? Simone clarifies, saying it's a mother and a 5-year-old, and that nobody saw anything. Sipwitz says it was ransacked, could have been an attempted burglary. 10 days ago, someone tried to break into the property. They mention that the victim is separated from the husband for his drinking, and the sister hasn't been able to get in touch with them. Fancy says, why don't you look at the stop and frisks, and Sipwitz gives a real testy, that's a thought, like it was almost like real catty. Like, real bitchy Sipwitz.
Yeah, well, you're dealing with a child death again, so this is where Sipwitz, he freaks out.
Sipwitz gets a little upset. Gets a little perturbed.
Yeah, very much.
They clarify that the kid was behind the mother, so the murderer had to walk around and get a headshot on the child while it was being clutched by its dead mother. You know, just real fun stuff.
Yeah, real cool shit.
All of a sudden, Cohen shows up asking about it, who got the Suarez case. Is happy when he finds out it's Sipwitz and Simone. And he says that she was a witness in a burglary homicide that Cohen is working. The defendants were almost done wrapping up a plea deal with him, so he wants to hide the fact that the victim is dead from the press so that he can close the deal with the dude, which he's having lunch with in about a couple minutes, I guess. Cohen asks a bunch of stupid questions, like, does her name show up on the board when victims' names are never put on the board? He asked if they mentioned it to the press, and
obviously not.
Yeah, Simone says no, and he's like, also, Martelli doesn't talk to no press, because he was the uniform officer that found the scene.
It's like, for a second there, Cohen forgets, like, who he's dealing with, you know?
Cohen forgets everything because he's worried about losing a done deal. Cohen lets him know that he already got in touch with the sister to not let anybody know that she is dead to prevent this case from going south, which kind of sucks, I imagine. Like, hey, so I got some news. Your sister's dead. What? Oh, by the way, don't tell anybody.
Yeah, can't say a thing. You can't grieve, you can't mourn, you can't do anything about it. But don't worry, this will all be worth it, because I can put someone behind bars who didn't kill her.
And it also sucks because she was at work, so she definitely left work, probably, but couldn't say why. So she's just like, I have to go. What was that call about? Nothing. I have to go home right now and not tell you what's going on.
Yeah, I'm sure her boss was super cool with that.
Because, yeah, I mean, bosses, especially, I mean, I don't know where she works, but usually people love it when you can't give a reason, you just leave. Cohen lets him know that he's very grateful, and Sipwitz responds with, that's what we live for. They walk outside to meet Wally, the lawyer, who's, like, pretty sloppy-looking dude. Keeps, like, rubbing his phone and, like, rubbing his shirt and all that, and looks pretty not well done up for a lawyer.
I think they're trying to show us that he's, like, not a good lawyer.
As they're getting ready to go to lunch, that lawyer, Wally, asks about Mrs. Suarez. Like, oh yeah, she didn't respond. Something about going to the hospital or something. He's like, oh yeah, she's having elective foot surgery. And the sister's crazy. She hangs up on me all the time. Sipwitz and Simone seem to keep their cool better than Cohen. As Cohen is, you know, riding on that lie.
Yeah, it's like, for a second there, like, Cohen forgets how to be a good lawyer? It's like he's brand new at this or something, because it's like everything is thrown in for a loop. He's so worried about messing up that he messes up. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, he does a bunch of things that are like, especially in this episode now, I'm realizing it as I'm going over it. He makes a lot of really dumb mistakes. When Cohen comes back, Sipwith and Simone are trying to talk to the sister, who is keeping up the ruse that she isn't dead, because Cohen didn't let him know that two officers may call them who know about the situation. Cohen was, like, pissed off, because he's like, oh, well, Jimmy already knows. Well, what's his name? It's, like, Wally DeSantos or some bullshit? He's got a weird fucking name.
Some bullshit.
Oh, Wally DiCarlo. And he's like, yeah, he found out at lunch. His partner beeped him while we were eating, because he was monitoring the ambulance calls. And Sipowitz and Simone, like, look at their watches. Is like, the ambulance call's from 3 hours ago? And he's like, well, he didn't get to him. He's like, well, it was his partner who did it. He didn't get to him right away because his partner was trying a case. And he's like, so what? He was listening to ambulance calls while trying the case? And then fucking, what's his name? Cohen, because he's so flustered, he's like, well, what does that mean? What does that matter? And he's like, maybe he didn't find out off the ambulance calls. Maybe he knows because his client arranged it and told him about it ahead of time. And he's like, oh, I can't imagine he'd do that. And then Sipowitz says, that's how Columbo got all over all them years. I don't know what that joke means, because I never watched Columbo.
And Columbo, from the little I know about Columbo, is I think the way he used to, like, get people is he would play dumb.
Okay.
Kind of like the way Wally is like, he would play dumb and, like, try to, like, play dumb towards people like he did. He was... And then he would pull one over on them type thing.
That makes more sense. And then Cohen starts to feel real bad about himself, saying that she asked for protection after the break-ins, but Cohen didn't think it was targeting her. Sipowitz starts looking harder at the stop and frisks to try and see if he can figure out who did the break-ins. And then Cohen is like, well, I'm going to go get that son of a bitch. And Sipowitz and Simone are like, calm down until we give you something so you can wag something at him besides your finger. And also call the sister so she'll talk to us. The next scene, Sipowitz and Simone bring in a gentleman named Arnell, who is acting pretty chill, no big deal. They ask him right off the bat, so you've ever committed a homicide or shoot a child? And said, you're gonna wish you were dead and buried if it turns out that it's a lie, because the guy says he doesn't. And then he's like, look, I once shot my cousin in the arm for stealing my bike. And then Simone grabs him over the table and brings up the break-ins. He's like, we weren't collared for that. And then he was like, you didn't get collared for that. Are you gonna get collared for, like, this homicide? And he said, no, I'm not. All I did was Jimmy some locks. And I mess with locks that I was told to, because Roger knows about it. He was told which locks to mess with. So they leave him in that room, and they go to a different room where they have Roger, and because they have a guy, I forgot, is his name Kyle? There's a detective that literally just watches people. Like, that's literally all they've done throughout the entire show. And they walk in, and as he's leaving, that detective's like, he says he wants a cigarette. And the guy's like, oh, I'd kill for a Newport. And Sipowitz says, now we know your asking price. They go over his name. Is it Roger or Van Earl? You've got different names. And he's like, who? Now, what's the name of the guy who hired you to mess with those locks? He's like, now that's a strange area. And Simone says, what comes out of your mouth next is either the name of that guy who hired you or teeth.
Yeah, buddy.
And he's like, look, man, I just want to say, I don't know the guy. I met him through a random coincidence. And then Sipowitz just says, hit him. and then the dude's freaking out. He says, how did he get Simone says, how did he get in touch with you? He's like, oh man, we met on a corner. We had some coffee, and he said he'd give me $200 to mess with 2B and some other apartments I choose in this building. And then they bring up that he had a possession collar and asked who the lawyer was, and then he describes Wally DiCarlo, and the guy says, he describes Wally DiCarlo, and then Simone says his name, and the guy's like, wow, that's X-Files, man. do you think that this is related? And then as they leave, they're like, pack of Newports. And the guy just goes, oh, yeah, man. And I was like, I really liked this character. Like,
heck yeah.
I thought he did a good...
I think NYPD Blue's at its best is when they have these, like, small conversations.
And this character is so dimensionalized, even though he only has a couple lines. He's like, I want some cigarettes. I had some substance abuse problems. And I was asked to do something that's not too illegal, but it got me $200. And now these guys are asking me all types of crazy questions. Next time we see Sipowicz and Simone, they're both in the restroom, and Simone lets Sipowicz know, hey, your doctor's here. And Sipowicz kind of has a mini freak out in the bathroom. And then we see Martinez and Medavoy, the only time we see them in this episode.
That's true.
Very weird. Kind of just, because this is the season finale of season 5, just to be like, they're still here. They still work here. They're just not involved in any of the cases that we're watching.
Yeah, like, they're still here. We don't care about them, but they're still here.
You see him in the bathroom, and then Martinez says, maybe he just needs a ticket fixed. And then Sipowicz kind of looks at him, doesn't say anything, and just walks out. And now begins my favorite scene. Because as you remember from last episode, Sipowicz is a little bit worried because he's had his parts of his prostate removed because of cancer. And his scores weren't showing zero, so it was possible he still had more cancer in his body. So what we're looking for is, does he still have cancer or does he have no cancer? So when he walks into the room, he sees Dr. Monzak, played by Titus Welliver, you know, from Lost, Deadwood, Bosch, various roles. And he
that Bosch role.
And it's tense, and then he goes, your score is essentially zero, you have no better news. I just have to check in 3 months, but I want you to think of yourself as a healthy person.
And Sipowicz can relax, you know?
Sipowicz kind of has a weird moment, though. He, like, kind of, like, looks shell-shocked by it. Dr. Monzak says, I know it's not a snap thing, but how was urinating? And Sipowicz is like, well, you know, that's going. And then out of nowhere, it is related, but strange. He says, have you been boning your wife? Have you been fucking? And Sipowicz says, no, I thought that was a foregone conclusion. And then he's like, what does that mean? And he's like, look, we don't think it's working, so no. And so he's like, so you're not getting boners, basically. He's like, so you're not getting hard. And then Sipowicz is like, okay, all right, hold on. And then he goes, and then the doctor goes, well, you know there are pills you could take. Well, first he says there are remedies, and Sipowicz, like, freaks out, and he's like, no, it's a pill. What did Sipowicz think he means? Like, oh, well, you know, us doctors can prescribe someone come over and fuck your wife properly. Like, what does he think he's going to say?
That, or, like, someone was going to mess with his dick or something.
Because he was just like, okay. He's like, no, I mean pills. I mean a pill you take and you get a boner.
They just hire, like, some nurse to come over and just play with his dick till he gets a boner. Like, that's the only thing I can think of. Like, because he does freak out for no reason.
And then he's like, yeah, I can write you a prescription right now. And the dude just whips out some prescription for boner pills and hooks him up.
Ugh, the world we live in, right?
and then Sipowicz is like, basically Sipowicz, it's a moment for Sipowicz to thank him for basically being his doctor babysitter during this crazy time. And Monzak says, my pleasure, and they shake hands, and that's it. It's just a scene to get Sipowicz the news that he's healthy, and hey, you could start boning your wife again.
There you go, dude. That's all the man needs, though, you know? All he needs to survive in this world is just some boner pills and the fact that he doesn't have cancer and he's good to go. And a little bit of racism.
Just the sprinkles on top of the sundae.
Just a spoonful.
Next scene for that case, Sipowicz and Simone, they meet in the bathroom again, but I believe it's supposed to be the next day because they're wearing different clothes. Very strangely, Sipowicz asks, hey, do you think these weather disruptions are from global warming? And then Simone says no. So Simone is a climate change denier.
Ooh, Greta Thunberg wouldn't enjoy that.
She needs to calm down. It's not becoming getting so angry about the Earth dying around her. Sipowicz notices that Simone is wearing a nicer suit than normal, and he says, "Are you applying for a loan?" And Simone says, "I wear the suit all the time," and Sipowicz just responds with, "No. No, you don't." It was pretty great.
No, you don't.
Nope.
That's a lie.
And then as Simone's about to leave the bathroom, he comes back in and says, "Schedules per bit, Diane and me, we're talking about getting married during lunch."
So romantic, dude.
Sipowicz, congratulations. He also says, "It was never any questions her loving you." I mean, well, there were questions about her sobriety. That was the big problem.
Because she was digging her dad's action.
She wasn't digging her dad's action. Let's not have that story be possible. Her dad was a pedophile. That is very different than her digging her dad's action.
What? Okay, well, controversy. Oh, was he a pedophile or was he just into his daughter?
Okay, well, we're done here. we're done.
I'm sorry.
Done here.
I thought this was America where I could ask questions and think and, you know, create a discourse.
Kyle,
I apologize.
Save that for your Pornhub playlists. Is he a pedophile or is he just into his daughter? A question that shouldn't be asked. It's just a question that shouldn't exist. They go out to the desks. Sipowicz and Simone are now smiling like idiots. They talk to Kirk and Russ. This is when they're calling the pedo hotline. As Simone gets a call, this is when Kirkendall and Russell run for fancy that they're calling different pedophiles, and now the news has got a hold of this girl being missing. And then we overhear that the call that Simone got is that a corrections officer says an inmate really needs to talk to them about their case, which is now looking like they're going to have to push that wedding because lunch is going to be taken up by traveling and interviews. But while that's going on, Sipowicz and Russell are making faces that if anybody could notice would know that something's going on.
Yeah, they're not very, like, smooth about it. For being detectives and having to, like, I feel like their job is to, like, keep important information hidden and have to, like, you know, do something. I don't know. They're really bad at whatever they're trying to do right now.
The ability to, like, pick up and not give physical tells as you tell lies. They're doing terrible jobs of doing that.
Oh, yeah. All of that.
Making tons of weird-ass faces. The next time we see him, Cohen... This is another example of Cohen doing the absolute wrong thing. Cohen is pacing in the jail cell where they're going to meet this inmate. And he says, whatever he wants, he gets. And then Simone's like, that's probably not something you want to have for openers there, Cohen. The inmate comes in, he's like, hi, I'm Leon Geddeson. And they shake hands, and then he introduces himself to the assistant DA. And then Sipowicz and Simone's like, Razor. He's like, yeah, also known as Razor. And for a second, I thought they were talking about Cohen. The first time I saw this, I thought they were trying to pretend like Cohen's nickname was Razor. And I got so confused, I was like, why the fuck would they do that? Like, what? Like, are they trying to intimidate this actual prisoner with Cohen? Like, and then I realized, like, no, they're just saying, like, don't treat this guy like he's a gentleman. His nickname is Razor. He probably murders people.
Yeah, they're trying to dehumanize him.
but for like half this episode, the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, we got Razor Leo Cohen here.
I think he goes by Leo the Razor Cohen. I know, semantics, but...
And he only does that because he was a real fan of The Outsiders on WCW. Razor Ramon and Kevin Nash, Big Diesel.
Big Daddy Diesel.
Okay, sorry. Sorry.
Thank you.
They're sitting down with Razor. Razor immediately looks at Cohen and says, so you can deal. And he's like, I have all the powers of the office. And he's like, good, because I have realistic expectations with my information. Sipowicz basically is like, I think Simone says, you get nothing without saying anything. And then the other guy, I think Cohen mentions some lawyer jargon. And then Sipowicz responds with, "That's lawyer mumbo jumbo, for you don't see ours until we see yours." And then the guy, Razor, says, "Through court and convictions and take the assistant out of the front of your name." And then they tell him to stop jerking off. I think Cohen jumps early asking for the name of who hired him to get the contract. And then Simone pumps the brakes and says, "No, we want all the names of everybody involved, including the asshole that murdered that woman and child. And if you don't want to give us those names, then you get nothing, and then everybody knows you're a rat."
That's all you had to do, was tell him, say those magic words.
So then he just says, "Give me a pad." And then fucking Cohen rips it out of his thing like he has so fast, and it's really funny. He's like, "Oh yeah, I'll get you a pad." And he's like moving stuff on his desk and on the desk and shit. It's pretty good. But that's another example of Cohen not doing a very good job, because he's like, he is way too willing to give this guy anything for something. And
right? Didn't he do that, like, didn't he do that not too long ago in another episode where he, like, got all fucking, like, antsy and, like, gave someone fucking immunity when they... Oh, yeah, right?
He gave the woman immunity, but that is questionable because he even said before it got rolling, he's like, "I'll make her queen for a day." And then Sylvia came in and was basically like, "That immunity was bullshit, this is bullshit," and shot it all down. So it's still kind of questionable if he meant to do that, but he does, in this episode at least, probably because he's shaken that another lawyer turns out to be an asshole. He is shaken off of, like, doing some things the right way. The next scene is a straight-up jump cut after they get that information. Like, it just is, like, straight jumps to Simone, like, almost beating on a guy. And he's like, "A woman and her child." And he's like, "You know who I am. I kill for money, man. Or I kill for hire." And he's like, "Who hired you?" He's like, "Razor Gaddiston. He hired me because a dude gave him the contract to kill a witness in their case." And then he was like, "Well, then why'd you kill the child?" He's like, "He saw me." And then the guy mentions, like, "I needed the money for Mexico. They won't help anybody out that has an IV problem, man." And he's like, "And the kid saw me. I couldn't risk it." Simone gets in closer. He's like, "Are you sure he saw you?" And then the guy kind of looks at the ceiling, and I was like, "Oh, that was too much. You should have, like, not even thought about it."
Yeah, you should have just said yes and then kept going.
But he says, "Couldn't risk it." And then Simone's like, "You're going to write, or I'm going to shoot you, or I'm going to give you a shot right to your liver that doesn't work," basically. Simone leaves that room to tell Fancy to get Cohen and get this lawyer before the lawyer finds out that they have all of it wrapped up. That's when Russell brings in the pedophile who says the little boy's room line. Next scene, Sipowicz, Simone, and Cohen are in the coffee room, and they bring in Wally DiCarlo, who's playing dumb and is acting like kind of an asshole, because he's, like, not happy with the tone that Cohen had when bringing him down here.
Yeah, Cohen gets mighty confident, even though he's done nothing but, like, be a shit lawyer this whole episode.
Well, what's interesting, too, is, like, because now Cohen, I think he feels big for his britches, because he's like, "Now we have the proof, so now I can go at this guy." But he doesn't get a chance to, because Simone goes super hard on him. He goes, he's like, I didn't really like the tone you had, Leo." And then Simone, he basically says that you're a shyster lawyer who arranges people getting killed. And the lawyer's like, "I'm not one of your suspects that you can intimidate, yell at, or beat." And then Simone just goes, "I'd like to beat you." Like, just a quick response, "I'd like to beat you." He's like, "Leo, are you going to accept this?" He's like, "Well, I don't know. Is this as good as when you lied to me about a plea deal while you know that you're setting up a murder?" And the guy's like, "You have not one scintilla of proof, or scintilla, or some word that shouldn't exist."
Scintilla. Scintilla.
Scintilla. Scintilla. Scintilla sounds like a really shitty nu metal band. And then Sipowicz says, "What's with your confidence, Wally? Is it because you wear beards on your errand? We know about Razor Gaddiston. We know about everything. And give me that cocky look again, you frog-faced hump."
Yeah, they go after him because he is kind of a sleazeball.
And he deserves it. Cohen says, "You're going to get confessions." He basically says, "I'm going to assume that this idea originated from your client and not you. And then the guy's like, basically lawyer talk for assuming that is the case. And he says, fine, you're going to wear a wire on your client. And the lawyer's like, wear a wire? He's like, crimes committed in conspiracy that aren't related to the original crime aren't covered by attorney privilege. And what I love about that line is I'm pretty sure that was added in, that was like dubbed, because it's on it's from Cohen, but you never see him say it.
Why do you think they added it in?
I think they added it in probably because of either, was it ABC or NBC Legal? They're just like, well, is that legal? And then somebody had to be like, no, it's definitely legal because it's not privilege anymore if it's regarding a separate crime that he is involved in.
It's, yeah, we need to, like, clear it up in the show and make it look like, and make it sound, just tighten it up, make it all sound real, make it all be truthful and shit. And I think they need to tighten the story up, so that's why they did it.
And sadly, while, I mean, it's not a great thing to know, but there's some people that probably never know anything about criminal justice other than television. So they're like, well, we gotta make it clear
that's
that...
That's very true.
We gotta make it clear that you can have a... You can't have a lawyer wear a wire on his client if it's in regards to a crime they both commit together, because the privilege would be between the lawyer and the client about a crime the client committed. That's privileged, but what isn't privileged is if something they've conspired together to do. So, you know, I think they just did that because they were like, some people might complain and not know the actual legalities of it. Also, there are some people that will never have to deal with this problem or care about this problem or know anything about it. So it's just like, just put it in there for clarification.
True, very true.
So the end of the episode, we got two big scenes. Russell and Simone, because earlier when they have a moment, Simone and Russell, where they talk to each other for a second, where they push the wedding till tomorrow because of all the stuff they're doing, and then Simone says, well, City Hall's been open a long time. But then we see at City Hall there's people getting married. It seems to be wrapping up. Simone and Russell run in, and they see a couple, and they say... The couple says, oh, well, the... What's her name? The receptionist isn't here, but the guy doing the marriages is still here. So they run into the room where the guy's doing them, and they say, hey, we're cops on the job, and we got off really late. So the officiant just is like, okay. And he's like, you guys got witnesses and the paperwork? And they give him the paperwork. He asks the guy of the couple that's still there in the waiting room to be a witness. He mentions, like, oh, my brother's supposed to be our witness, but I think he got caught up speeding. He's like, oh, okay, whatever. I don't care. I'm trying to get married.
No, I think Simone cares. I just think he's so, like, amped up about what's happening with him that he's not thinking about it at all, you know, like not thinking about what's going on with that guy.
The couple that's waiting in the room, they give up the husband to be the witness, and
Simone's just like, I don't care what's happening, I just need to marry this mental train wreck.
I need to hitch my train to this disaster.
Because we both have suffered some real heavy trauma in our lives, and we basically have not tried to tackle it, so...
And hey, you know what helps? Adding on some more. You make more layers. It's like a lasagna of pain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like a lasagna, for sure.
It's a lasagna of trauma.
The more layers, the better.
The trauma lasagna.
Yeah, more layers, the better.
What I don't understand, because they needed a witness, so they asked the dude of this couple. I don't know why they didn't just ask both of them. Like, couldn't they both witness? Like, they could have both been in that room.
Oh, very true. I never noticed that.
Like, it doesn't make any sense that they're like, hey, could you witness us? And then the woman gives Russell her flowers, and then she just sits there. She doesn't go in with them. They go in, Russell, Simone, and this new guy, Alex. He mentions his name is Alex Johnson, real pretty boy. And then the officiant starts, and he's really phoning it in. I don't know if you noticed this. Really phoning it in. Like, kind of not giving a shit, you know?
Well, I mean, to be honest and to be fair,
you're gonna say what I want to say. I'm ready for it.
I've heard you bitch about this before, where, you know, it's basically closing time, and these motherfuckers walked in with like 2 minutes left or a minute left before it was time for people to go home, and they're looking for love and shit.
I'm gonna get into it a little bit, just a little bit. But you are 100% right. Yeah, he's phoning it in because the receptionist is gone. So effectively, they are closed. They're done. He just happens to still be there. So when they're like, oh, could you do one? He's like, sure, I can run it through. So he's running it through the beginning. But then he just sees the love on their face and the excitement. So he kind of, you know, adds a little more panache, a little more pizzazz to the proceedings.
He starts to pick it up a little bit.
He starts to pick it up like a ska concert, and...
Oh my god.
You're welcome. And then it ends with them getting married, they put the rings on, they kiss. It's all awesome. Then as they're leaving, they thank Alex Johnson for being their witness, and Alex Johnson's brother is on his way, and he's like, well, could we witness for you then? And then he's like, no, my brother came in from out of state, we'll just do it tomorrow. Russell's like, oh, we were going to do it tomorrow too. Ha ha ha. We're so excited. And then the brother shows up, and Simone, the cojones on Simone, to run back into the room and tell the guy one more. He doesn't ask. He doesn't go, hey, the guy showed up. Could you do one more, please? He just goes, one more.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, Simone knows that, like, he's gonna get it, you know? Like, he's got the confidence to go in there. He knows the guy's in for love. He saw how much love was resonating off of him and Diane.
Diane.
And so, you know, he was like, I got it, dude.
That's when I wrote and underlined it. Like, I would imagine if I was the officiant, I'd be like, you're not my fucking boss. Okay, I did something nice for you. I'm not going to bring in all of your friends and marry them today. I'm going to go home, because I got shit to do, too. Okay, yeah, you're a cop. Okay, you dealt with some murderers and some pedophiles today. I had to marry a bunch of people that shouldn't get married. Okay, so yeah. I'm going to go home. I'm going to go draw a bath, have some wine, and pretend I don't do this for a living. And I'm not going to be told to marry people when I don't have to.
Yeah, and I just helped contribute to the 50% divorce rate in the country. So I'm good, man.
They ask if they can witness for him. Oh yeah, that was before. And then the brother. And then even a more G move. Simone goes, hey, let me have your ticket. And he just takes the dude's ticket, makes out with his new wife in front of a janitor who's just trying to clean the fucking place up. I don't know if you saw that guy.
I did, which also makes it even worse. Because, like, they're really closed.
Like, they're done.
If the janitor's, like, showing up and is, like, trying to clean shit and you're in the way, like, they are really closed, bro.
It only would have been better if he turned on the vacuum and they're like, hey, we're getting married here. He's like, I'm sorry. I got shit to do. You think this is the only room I'm vacuuming today? No, I gotta clean.
Oh, what would have made it better is if he went out to the guy and was like, hey, we're getting married out here. Do you know how to play, like, the harp? The guy just, like, did it. When it was all said and done, the guy's, like, getting ready to clean up and go clean the rest of the place, and he walks in and goes, one more.
Oh, we don't like harp, though. We like more of a violin. And he pulls out a violin. God, these fucking privileged assholes. Getting married. So that's what ends with Simone and Russell taking people's tickets and making out in a clearly closed office. I also wanted to mention that's the second time it was mentioned or done, the idea that a cop can just make tickets go away.
They can.
They just make tickets disappear. Don't have anything really else to say about it. Just interesting that it gets mentioned twice. But if you know a cop and you're good enough friends, then just make it disappear.
Sure.
The end of the episode starts off with a little softcore music because Sipowicz and Sylvia are laying down post-coital. Clearly they've been knocking boots. He says that the stocks for that company are in a tremendous uptrend. And then he makes it clear that he told Sylvia about Simone and Russell. And he's like, don't tell anybody. And she says, oh, I won't tell anybody. You're the Daily Gazette. And then he says, I confided in no one that isn't sworn to secrecy. And it's like, well, you can still tell a whole bunch of fucking people, then tell them to... And then swear him to secrecy.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't change that at all. And then it cuts to black, and you hear Sipowicz says, you want to see if we can get a twofer out of this medicine? Going in for round dose, and that's the end of the season. Now, anything else you want to say about this episode, or the whole season? Because the whole season's over.
No, not really.
I mean, most valuable player, clearly Tommy Richardson, just for the way he said people's names.
Oh, yeah.
Tommy. Laurie. Diane. That's the end of this season. Now, I don't want to spoil what's coming up, but the next season's going to be very interesting. I'm very excited about it, because I didn't realize just how intense it is for everybody who might be listening to the show, because the beginning of next season's a pretty interesting trauma lasagna for a lot of us. I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, you sat here and talked all this shit about it, and then, like, people came out of the woodwork to tell you that you're the dumbass.
Well, no, I didn't even say, because that episode hasn't come out where we talked about it, and I was going to cut it out anyway. The part
that's fine, you can cut it out, but, like,
I don't...
Like, you talk a bunch of shit, and, like, the rest of the world came out and was like, oh, no, Kirk, you're wrong.
Look, I'm not saying it's not going to be sad. It's going to be sad. It's going to be really sad. But it's a part of the show. We can't just not watch it because we know how bad it's going to be. Not bad in terms of quality.
This is where I feel like you don't listen sometimes. And I never said not watch it.
You said get dad to do it.
Yeah, that's not watching it. That's just me not watching it.
You don't want to do those episodes. So, in theory, you just wanted to show up when Ricky Schroeder showed up. Just pretend like it wasn't weird that you weren't there for those first five episodes.
I just want to show up for Ricky Schroeder like he did for Kyle Rittenhouse, you know? Like, we're all just there for each other. We're all, you know, taking care of each other.
I was wondering how every single episode with Ricky Schroeder is going to go with that information in our minds. So it's going to be very interesting. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher. Well, it's actually called Apple Podcasts, not iTunes. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. We're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod, where I'm willing to talk to you about the impending cry storm that is the first five episodes of season six of NYPD Blue. Have a good one.
Peace.
Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It'll help people see the show, and more importantly, maybe start watching NYPD Blue itself. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, there's a couple of books out there. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles about the show. True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons. And then Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. If you need the show itself, it is currently on Hulu, all 12 seasons. However, something has come to our attention regarding this very episode, Season 5, Episode 22. The version we watched on Hulu is actually the syndication version and is about 20 minutes shorter than the actual airing episode. So 2 weeks from now, we're going to be coming out with another episode about this season finale, about all the scenes that were cut out, because there's actually a lot of crazy cool stuff that I saw on the DVD version and the full official version. So hope to see you then. Have a good one, and peace. Wear a mask.
Did you talk about the whole conversation where you... I don't think you brought up the conversation where Sipowicz brings up that the doctor told him about the dick pills.
What?
Where Sipowicz brings up to his wife at the time, the doctor asked me how my dick was, and she's like, well, what'd you tell him? And he's like, oh, I told him fine. He asked me how we were doing in the intimacy department. And I told him we were having some troubles, but he told me there was this pill or something. And then doesn't she talk about it a little bit? Or is that like a different episode? Am I putting episodes together?
I think it might be a different episode, or, I mean, it's happened before. You might have a longer version of the episode than Hulu does, because I don't have that in my notes, and I didn't remember hearing anything like that. So maybe. I mean, I'll have to do some research. Maybe there's a director's cut of the season finale of season 5.